I don't know if you have extension cords around your house and what your remedy is for keeping them neat and tidy and not tangled up. I would like to know your remedy because ours just don't seem to last forever. They get twisted up and tied up and messed up and tangled up, and I don't know if this word applies, discombobulated. And so I have to spend literally too often a long time just trying to untangle my extension cord before I can use it. And then I'm frustrated and aggravated and ticked off because this thing that I need is not available because it's all tied up in knots and twisted up and messed up and screwed up, and before I ever get to use it. And you say, well, you should go green and then you don't have to use the extension cords. Yeah, they don't last but like 8 minutes either. But anyway, when I come to John chapter 13, I wonder if Jesus does not look at American society and American culture and Christian society and Christian culture and say, you've gotten it all twisted up, all tangled up, all messed up, all screwed up from what it's supposed to be, what I demonstrated for it to be, for what I told you it was supposed to be. And you say, why would Jesus say that? Because the disciples here, they had done just that. So John chapter 13, it's 24 hours approximately from the time that Jesus is going to be crucified. Disciples are in the upper room. Luke 22 tells us they are seated around the table and they're arguing. Who would be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? They're talking about positions. They're talking about power. They're talking about authority. And how Jesus' heart must have sunk to the core of his being, because Mark chapter 10, verse 45, Jesus came not to be ministered unto, but to minister and to give his life a ransom for many. And Jesus would tell these guys, you've missed it. You've messed up. You've gotten it all twisted up, all tangled up, all, if this is a word that applies, discombobulated. You do not realize what I'm about, what my kingdom is about, what life is about. You messed it up. They messed it up. And we in American society, we've messed it up really bad as well. We think he who has the most toys and the greatest position and who can wield the most power and be the meanest and the gruffest and the rudest is the best. And Jesus here today teaches us just the opposite. You realize in Mark, Jesus 30 times is called a servant. John 13, Jesus teaches the disciples this. True greatness is not in having servants. True greatness is being a servant. Totally different than our American culture and our American mindset. 24 hours before Jesus is to be crucified. If we were to slip into the upper room, we would think that there would be almost a halo around his head. We would think there would be Shekinah glory filling the room. We would be horrified to find that Jesus is on all fours washing feet. What's this all about? This, next to their crucifixion, may be the most glorious picture of Jesus and what he and his kingdom is all about in all of Scripture. Today, three lessons about Jesus and what truly greatness is in a sermon I've entitled A Great Big Lesson from Jesus. First one is this. Notice Jesus' concern. John 13, look at verse 1. Now before the feast of Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. Notice those two words. Jesus knew. Verse 1, he knew his hour had come. Verse 3, he knew he had all authority. Verse 3, he knew he was about to die and ascend to his Father. Verse 11, he knew Judas was about to betray him. Verse 18, he knew who his chosen ones were. Crucifixion did not take Jesus by surprise. It was according to God's plan. It was according to his plan. Everything was happening according as it was supposed to, precisely as he had planned it. Look at verse 2. Supper being ended. Devil having now put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him. Jesus knowing that the Father had given, notice this phrase, all things into his hands. And that he was come from God and went to God. My question, what would be the evidence that all things were given into his hands? Omnipotence, grandeur, glory, all of it had been placed into Jesus' hands. It was almost like the Father in thunderous tones had committed everything unto the Son. Would the trees in reverence bow down, acknowledging this moment? Would the stars in their lofty position roll back and sing, Holy, 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 Lord God Almighty? Would the rocks cry out in their matchless way, crying out, oh, this is all things is committed to his hands. He's getting ready to die for the whole world. What would mark this moment? All things are committed into his hands. Think about his hands for a moment. He took disease into his hands and destroyed disease. He took blindness in his hands and banished blindness. Would take leprosy in his hands and tell leprosy, leave him and be gone. He would take death into his hands and defeat death. And now all things are committed into his hands. How is he going to respond? All things, everything is committed into the Father, into his hands. Is he going to start telling people, you do this, you do that, you do this? What's he going to do? Now understand this culture. Look at the next verse. He rises from the supper, laid aside his garments, took a towel and girded himself. Understand this culture. They didn't have sidewalks and they didn't have paved streets like we do. So they had truly not dirt roads like we know. They had mud roads. I mean, there was no gravel like we know. It was red dirt, brown dirt. It was dirt. So you were walking with your sandals on dirt road. Well, they had animals, and animals leave things behind when they're going down these roads. So your feet would get dirty with dust and other things. So when you come to someone's house, you would not wear your dirty sandals into their house. you would take off your sandals and you would leave them at the door. In this culture, they didn't have chairs around tables like we would. That they would recline around the table, and often people's feet would be in somebody's face. And they would be stinking, pardon my grammar, they would be smelling to high heaven. All of the disciples around there, why didn't any of them notice? Why didn't any of them do anything about it? Because they had the same problem you and I did. They were self-focused and self-centered. Number one, Jesus' concern. All things committed into his hands. And he's not focused on himself. He rises up, girds himself, verse 4, lays aside his garments, took a towel, and girded himself. Number two, Jesus' calling. In the highest consciousness of his sonship, he stoops to the most menial of tasks. The glory of his kingdom is expressed not by sitting on some royal throne. Oh, he'll do that. But the highest glory of his kingdom is expressed by taking off his outer garment and putting on the slave garment, taking the towel that a slave would take. Omnipotent deity. Never in the history of the planet was someone so overqualified for a task. And Jesus literally puts on the garment of a slave. Look at verse 5. He pours water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel wherewith he was girded. No expression in the human language that rivals the glory of the theological revelation of God washing the disciples' feet. Can you imagine God washing your feet? When you're arguing about who's greatest, who's biggest, who's baddest, Bible times, the lowliest of servants would be the ones washing the feet. Jewish servants weren't allowed to wash feet. That was reserved for Gentile servants. And not just Gentile servants. Pardon me for saying this, just the way it was. Female Gentile servants. So Jesus is doing the lowest task known to man. Remember what they were doing in Luke 22, verse 24? There was strife among them. Which of them should be accounted greatest? All things are committed unto Jesus' hands. Can you hear the conversation? Thomas says, I'm greatest. I'm the smartest of you doofuses. James and John says, nuh-uh, we're greatest. We're the sons of thunder, lightning, baby. Peter says, uh-uh, I'm the only one in the group that's ever walked on water. I'm the greatest WWF world champion of the world. Woo! Right here, baby. Jesus responds. He doesn't scold. He gets up and he serves. Serves. Jesus teaches us a lesson that Neil Jackson needs to learn. Best way to stop an argument? Serve. Now here's what I struggle with. Jesus served everyone in the room. Now he already showed you, he knows everything. He knew everything that was going to happen. So he washed Thomas's feet, And he knew that Thomas was going to say, unless I put my hand into his side, I'm not going to believe. And Jesus was there washing his feet. He washed Peter's feet, and he knew that Peter was getting ready to go out and cuss like a sailor. Blankety blank, I don't know the man. Wash his feet. Wash James and John and Matthew's feet, and they were going to follow far off. Wash Judas Iscariot's feet, the one that was going to betray him. He served without exception. You see, I can serve people that are nice to me. I can serve people that are good to me. I can serve people that I like. Serving everybody, I struggle with that. Here's the other thing I struggle with. Jesus served without exception. Jesus served without expectation. There's no record in any gospel any person got up and washed his feet. Now, you would think these guys would get it. About the second or the third guy in, they would say, okay, hey, let me help you, Jesus. We'll do Bartholomew's. We'll do his. And Peter, come on, Peter, get up here and you help out. You would think they would jump in. And they say, okay, Jesus, we're going to fight. We're all going to get bigger than you. We'll get one foot and the other get the other. You think they would? No record in Scripture. Anybody washed his feet. And he didn't get his feelings hurt over it. Have you ever been there? All I do is serve and serve and serve and serve and serve. Nobody appreciates me around here. Ever been there? Jesus was there. He served, and nobody served him back. He wasn't doing it for the praise of man. He was doing it for the praise of his Father. And he was doing it to show us, you serve. Serve everybody. If they serve you back, great. If they're clueless and they never serve you back, you serve them anyway. You say, how could he do this? 1 Peter 5:5. Talks about the younger serving the elder. Yea, all of you be subject to one another. See the next phrase? Be clothed with humility. God resists the proud, gives grace to the humble. Be clothed with humility. It literally means if you're going to put this into practice, you got to do what Jesus did. Put on the garments of a slave. Now, a lot of us, we walk around like I'm somebody. In my house, I got my chair. And I got my remote control. Don't mess with my TV. Don't mess with my air condition. As long as I got my remote control and I can control the thermostat, I'm happy. If you come and get in my way or mess with my thermostat, I'm irritable. Jesus says you need to be clothed with humility. Imagine what a church would be like, a job site would be like, if we were all just clothed with humility. Went around, can I serve you? Can I just serve you? Can I serve you? Imagine what would happen if we had like 72 volunteers to work in Beulah Kids and the nursery. Nursery workers have never had this. Hey, you only have to work one Sunday every 2 years because we have so many volunteers that just want to serve around here. Never happened. But that's what he's talking about. I'm clothed with humility. It's not about me and what I want. I just want to serve. That's what Jesus says. secret of greatness. George H.W. Bush gave the eulogy at President Reagan's funeral. President Reagan was shot in 81. He was in the hospital. He was recovering from a gunshot wound. And one of his aides came into the room. I mean, he was pretty serious off. And President Reagan was on the floor wiping up some water that was on the floor. The aide said, "President Reagan, why are you on the floor?" And Matt was up here. Matt could do an impression. I don't do impressions. He said, "Well, I spilt water on the floor, and I really love this nurse, and I didn't want her to get in trouble because she wasn't cleaning up after me, so I just decided to get down on the floor and clean it up myself." You know, none of us should be too big to do any task. Amen? Cleaning toilets, guys. Washing dishes. Washing clothes. Helping. None of us should be too big to do any task. They say, "Oh, well, that's woman's work." No, it's not. It's servant's work. And the biggest servant in your house should be you. It should be, "Hey, honey, let me serve today. I just want to pamper you. I just want to serve you and serve you and serve you and serve you and serve you." There should be fights breaking out in every home because each other's wants to serve more. And the husband says, "No, let me serve." And the wife says, "No, I want to serve." No. That would make every church the dream church. Every employee, the dream employee. Hey, boss man, I just want to serve. I've already got all my work done. Now, how can I serve some more? How can I serve? That's what Jesus says is the secret to greatness. Number two, Jesus' calling. Mark said, "He came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, give his life a ransom for many." Number three, Jesus' challenge, "And I'll be done." Look at verse 12. 6 through 11, Jesus is arguing with Peter over if he's going to wash his feet or his whole body. Verse 12, just for time, we'll jump in at verse 12. "So after he had washed their feet and had taken his garments and was set down again, he said unto them, 'Know ye what I have done to you? Do you understand what this is all about? You call me Master and Lord, and you say, well, for so I am.'" Verse 14. "If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, ye also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that ye should do as I have done to you." Jesus says, "You understand what I'm trying to teach you." Remember the context. They're arguing, who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom? "Hey, Thomas, I am. I'm the smartest. Sons of thunder." No. "We call fire down from heaven." Jesus challenged, "Guys, you messed it all up. You've twisted it all up. You've tangled it all up. Your conception is all wrong. Greatness, not in how many servants you have, it's how many people you serve." World teaches greatness is in your position. Greatness is in your title. Greatness is in your power. Greatness is in your control. Authority in God's kingdom comes from being a servant. What keeps the church from following Jesus' example? How often do we go out to the buffet? "Come on, I'm first. Benjamin's in Myrtle Beach. Go to the buffet." You know what we all do? Back row to the godly people on the front row. You know what we do when we go to the buffet? We get the best piece of meat. We want the big piece, The fresh piece, the thick piece, the juicy piece, the one that's only been there like 2 seconds. If it's been there sitting there all day, you know what we do? We leave it for that guy behind us. Jesus says, authority in God's kingdom is looking out for other people, not yourself. That's what it's about. Now, some denominations, they have made foot washing an ordinance. Okay, we have foot washing services. You say, Jackson, do you believe in foot washing? So understand, yes, I believe in foot washings. Look at verse 15. For I have given you an example that ye should do, notice the next word, as I have done to you. Key to understand this passage and understand foot washing is the word as. It's, if you look it up in the original, it's according as. Jesus didn't establish another ritual, not saying, hey, you got to go and do this. Now, I think it's great. I think foot washings are great. When Adrian Rogers retired from his church, they called the next guy. He washed the feet of the guy that followed him. I think it's great. But I don't think this is teaching foot washing. Okay, we got to have foot washings the fifth Sunday of every month. I don't think that's what Jesus was teaching. It's according as. He was saying, I want you to think the same way I'm thinking. In our day and age, we don't walk everywhere we go. We thank God we don't have dirt roads everywhere where we go. We have sidewalks and we don't wear sandals. So the need to wash feet, we do that at home before we leave. So we don't have to do that. What Jesus is teaching is, put others first. Put other people's needs before your need. In a world filled with self-centeredness, you be others focused. So let me bring it down home, and I'll be done. In a day where a lot of us, myself included, are germophobes, I think washing feet is a great thing. And we may do it. And I'll be first to do it. And I won't wear gloves when I do it. I think it's a good thing. But what Jesus was saying, the new mom who's staying up all night washing feet is saying, hey, I'm going to come over and just rock the baby so you can have a couple hours to sleep. That's what he's saying. It's finding the lonely senior saint who just needs somebody to talk to, and you go by and visit and just let them talk and talk and talk and talk, and you just listen and listen and nod your head and listen and listen and listen. It's for you to call and just check on that shut-in who doesn't get a lot of visits, and you're just calling just to check on them. It's, and I like this one, it's finding that person that just likes Hershey's quadruple brownies, and you cook it and you say, hey, I just wanted to bring you Hershey's quadruple brownies just to say I love you, I was thinking about you, and I wanted to bring you Jesus in the form of Hershey's quadruple brownies. That's what he's talking about. Look back at the passage and I'm done. Do you know what I have done to you? You call me Lord, Master. You say well, or you say correctly, for I am. If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, have served you, you ought also to wash one another's feet. you ought also to go around serving others. Verse 15. For I have given you an example. I have given you an illustration that you should do as I have done to you. Let me give you one. I can give you one more present illustration. George Washington was known as maybe the greatest American. Man, you know, on our dollar bill. So probably the most circulated man in America, George Washington. Established the American Republic. Spent his life, you read about him, surrendering his power. Which most people, when they get power, they cling to power, they hold on to power. Not George Washington. Every time he got power, he would surrender it and release it. George Washington, interestingly enough, he is the only president that was unanimously elected. And you were probably familiar, it takes 270 electoral votes to be elected. And here lately, it's been very close. George Washington, only president in the history of our country to be unanimously, to get every electoral vote unanimously elected. Not one time, two times. They wanted to elect him a third time. He said, no, our country does not need to keep electing me. They need another man. They wanted to make him king. He says, America definitely doesn't need a king. We already seen what happened with England when they had a king. And he gave his power away. It was true when they were looking for someone to lead the Revolutionary Army. They came to him, they said, Mr. Washington, we want you to lead the army. He accepted under one condition. I will accept it, but when the war is over, I resign my commission and I walk away. I do not want the power and I don't want to stick around. When the war is over, I'm done. And I walk away. King George III, when the war was over, when England was defeated, George Washington, history tells us, was the most popular man in the world. King George III from England asked Benjamin West, what's Washington going to do now? Hey, the whole world is watching him. What's he going to do? Benjamin West said this. He says he's going to go home and farm. King George from England said this. If he does that, he will be the greatest man in the world. For men don't just give up power. Can I disagree with King George? Jesus taught us to do that. He said, the greatest among us is not those who lord power over people. The greatest of us is those who serve. He says, I've demonstrated it. Now you go and follow my example.